Let's start with this, just a quick chazara. The reason why I want to do this is because this, again, makes up the building blocks of everything with kasher. So, first start is that tam ke'ikar. Taste is of the essence, right? We previously learned that even if you don't have the actual physical treif object in it, so if you take out the treif object, but you have the taste that's exuded from the object, that's like the object itself, right? Which we called tam ke'ikar, taste is of the essence, the taste is like the iser itself. And we call the taste that goes into the walls of the cookware or the walls or the other food, blios, things that were swallowed. And those are the things that we have to contend with. The reason why I always think of it like food dye. Imagine you have a food dye that went into something. So you don't actually have like anything really physically present anymore, but it colors it. So imagine taste coloring a food or coloring the walls of a pot. That's essentially what we're dealing with. So the other thing we learned, yeah. After 24 hours, taste goes bad. So we said that the only thing that the Torah actually cares about is good taste, right? If it's good taste that enhances, then that's what the Torah said is aser. But anything that's a bad taste, anything that, let's say, makes it taste bad or itself has gone bad or rancid, so the Torah doesn't care about that taste, technically. So the rule is after 24 hours, those blios, that taste that's in the walls of any cookware, it goes bad after 24 hours. We figured out how Chazal arrived at that number, but that's what we call eino ben yomo, right? It's not within the first 24 hours. It's not the day of. So after 24 hours, any taste that's in the walls of cookware goes bad, and we don't have to worry about it. If it's still within 24 hours, the taste remains. It's a good taste, and that taste comes right back out into your food. So let's just demonstrate here. It's a two-way street, okay? What it means is a two-way street. When I cook food, that means taste is going from the walls of the pot into the food, and it's going from the food into the walls of the pot. Always a two-way street. Now, by the way, slides are so much easier than actually flipping through it, you know? Okay.
Hence install a projector.
Yeah, right? David, next time, have a projector up. Okay, so let's say I'm cooking in a ben yomo pot, which means this pot has been used within the past 24 hours. So what that means, taste is going into the walls of the pot from the food, but taste is also coming out from the walls of the pot into my food. Did I just say which? Okay, but meaning it's going both ways. It's the two-way street, right? So that means that both the walls of the pot have taste of whatever food I'm cooking, and my food has whatever taste was in the walls of the pot. Meat, dairy, whatever we're dealing with. Okay? That's when it's a two-way street. But if it's eino ben yomo, so that means the taste in the walls of the pot in the cookware is no good anymore. It's gone bad. It doesn't have its potency anymore. And so, really, what's happening is taste is only going one way. Taste is going from food into the pot, but it's not coming from pot into the food because it's been 24 hours. So that taste that's in the pot, I don't care about anymore. Is that clear so far? Any questions? Okay, so that's where we've been until now, basically. And the reason why that matters is because everything hinges on that, the taste. Most of the time, I don't actually have pork sitting in my food, right? Most of the time, I'm not pouring in dairy into my meat food. It happens. Mistakes happen. But usually the mistakes that happen in the kitchen are using the wrong cookware. And that's why the 24-hour rule makes a big difference. Just, I want to make it very, very clear. There is a very big exception to this rule, and that is davar charif, something that's spicy. Onions, garlic, anything like that, has the ability to revitalize taste, okay? So any idea that we have about taste going in and out of vessels, in and out of cookware, it's been 24 hours, it hasn't been 24 hours, as soon as a davar charif, something really spicy is involved, forget all our rules, all right? Meaning, if there's an onion, just forget everything we just said, and that's a question that has to be asked. And Yirtzeh Hashem, we'll talk about davar charif. I just make it very clear that any rule you think, oh, my pot's good, you know, it's been 24 hours, so my food must be fine, and then you're thinking, okay, I got this covered, and then you realize you used an onion, and that just ruined everything. Okay, that's off the outset.
Are we covering davar charif today?
No, we won't be covering davar charif today. That will be after. The reason why we don't, davar charif is much better to learn about once you know all the rules. Because then you know all the rules and everything that happens. And then you know, comes along davar charif and ruins everything. So at least you should know everything before it ruins all the things that you thought you knew. Okay. So, tonight what we're going to talk about is how, not, I mean, we talked about taste transferring, but how does taste transfer? When is it going to be a problem? What are the mistakes? What are the issues? Okay, so after that lengthy introduction and going over what we've done before, let's actually get to some questions. Let's get to some topics we'll be addressing tonight. So, first question, who wants to take it?
I have one sink in my apartment. Can I wash both meat and dairy dishes in it? What about my dishwasher? Can I use it for both meat and dairy dishes as long as I clean them in separate cycles?
Okay. So most of us aren't lucky enough to have two dishwashers. And some of us don't. I mean, I didn't have a dishwasher for years, right? So can you use the same dishes?
You had one just yourself.
Well, yes, thank you, David. Right. At least someone remembers. Okay, so, right. So using the same sink for dishes or dishwasher, what's the issue? So, what do you think? I mean, would you use one dishwasher for meat and dairy? Okay. Good. That's the right answer. Let's stick with that answer, okay? So even if we don't get, no, we'll get to it. But that's the right answer. No, we can't. But why, right? So again, taste transfers, but how, why? Okay, the second question, and this one we've touched on, just through this chazara, what we just did, but Sunday morning at 8 a.m., I cooked a cheese omelet in my dairy pan. So far, so good. Dairy and dairy. That night at 7 p.m., the same day, I accidentally used that same pan to fry schnitzel. Can I eat the schnitzel? Do I have to kosher the pan? Okay, so what's the first question we asked? Has it been 24 hours?
Yes. Sorry, no.
It hasn't been 24 hours. So what do I have to worry about in the walls of the pan? What's still there?
The dairy taste.
The cheese taste. So when I fry that schnitzel, the dairy taste comes out into the schnitzel. And what also happens to the pan at the same time? What's going into the walls of the pan?
Schnitzel.
Right. The taste of the schnitzel. It's going both ways. Oh. It hasn't been 24 hours.
I guess it's chicken via breadcrumbs.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Meat. Okay. Yes.
Breadcrumbs are going into the wall.
Breadcrumbs. I mean, yeah, you have meat, you know, with a little oil they're going, right? So, unless it's a dry fry, okay, you know.
It seems like a pretty straightforward case of the pan and the food being bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is a straightforward case, basically, of when it's going to be a problem going both ways. Yeah. I just brought that really just to make sure to highlight one of the key things that comes up. This is like classic. But also, we're going to see it matters which type of cookware I'm using. If I was frying on the flame, great. What if this was in, you know, a cup or something like that? And the last one, and again, yes, this was a real question. So my friend was storing leftover pizza in my fridge, not mine, someone else's, and placed it haphazardly such that it fell face down on an open package of deli meat. You can tell this was like, single guy's apartment. Do I have to throw deli and the pizza out? So what do you say? Yeah, what do you think, Chance?
No, because they're both cold.
They're both cold, okay. Everyone cool with that?
Is it Dover? Is it La?
Is Dover La? Is it dry?
What are the Hebrew words for that again?
Dover Yavesh, Dover La, dry or wet. Okay.
Does the pizza get through the deli to the whole pack or just anything to the top piece?
I'm assuming it lands on the top piece. Would you eat that top piece?
The top piece, no. The whole pack, though?
Okay, so you wouldn't eat it. Chance, would you eat it?
Not the top piece either.
Not the top. You wouldn't?
Just to be safe.
Okay, safe is always good. By the way, what?
I need the top piece. Just clean it off.
Okay, wash it off.
Transfers via heat and something that's wet.
Okay, wet, but there's no heat, right? And that's what Jared's saying. They're both cold, so just wash it off, right? So the first most important thing when it comes, what?
Pizza falls in it hard enough though. Like it makes. Does the impact like make it go in any harder?
The pressure.
But we
how do you wash off pizza?
Right. So good. So how do we wash off pizza? That's a very good question. If you can't wash it off, can you eat it? Meaning the white the deli meat easy. You know, the more processed it is, the easier it is to wash it off. So it depends on how healthy you are. So that's the first answer. But when it comes to pressure, by the way, of how hard it hits, we do not assume that's pressure enough to transfer taste. The only type of time we talk about pressure is like using a knife right. And cutting through things.
Oh, I mean, it looked like that he just tossed the pizza in the fridge. So.
Right.
That like fell off a shelf somehow.
Right.
Like collapsed through.
I said, when it comes to, a Bucker's apartment, I can't ask questions. Like this is just what's, this is probably the cleanest part.
That's why I'm assuming the worst.
Yeah, assuming the worst. There you go.
Were there any toppings on the pizza, like onion?
What?
Were there any toppings on the pizza?
I didn't ask. It's, right. Okay. It's a good question.
Does it make a difference if there are onion toppings?
It's not cooked, though.
So it's not cooked, or it's also not, there's no heat, right? There's no heat. So the first rule when it comes to kashrus and transfer of taste.
Now, how was the pizza when you threw it into the fridge?
It was cold. Okay. It was cold. Yeah, you know, it was cold. Nice and ready for breakfast. Okay, so what? Cold pizza for breakfast. The best. Come on. Okay, so the first rule when it comes to taste transferring is you need two things. You need a medium, like a liquid or a fat, and you need a heat source, okay? Taste doesn't just transfer, right? Now, taste can mix into things. I can have milk that falls into a pot of everything, and then I can't find it, so I have to have nullification, and it can mix around. But taste itself, just by two things touching, does not transfer, and certainly not into cookware, without heat and some fattiness, oil, or liquid to help transfer the taste. Right? So if I just have two cold things that touch, there's no heat, and they're both totally dry, right? I have two. Imagine I just have two cups that touch, right? And this is meat, and this, and whatever, this one right here is dairy. These two things touch. Nothing happens. There's no heat. There's no liquid. There's nothing between them. There's no transfer of taste, right? So the first rule when it comes to anything is I need a medium, like a liquid or something, and the heat. So what that means...
liquid and heat?
You need a medium, which would be a liquid, a fat, an oil, anything that basically has some residue, plus you need heat, right? There will be a few exceptions, but we're going to operate under that rule for now in order to transfer heat.
But two cold liquids that mix together are totally mixed.
So, but that's not just a taste. Now you have two physical things, right? Physical things are always a problem. The physical item is quite literally there unless you nullify it. But we're talking about the taste, right? So, yeah, you have a question?
No.
Okay. So, basically, it comes down to sometimes you can have two pots on your stove that touch, right? Two pots just bang together on the stove. So, if there's no, right, so there's no heat, even if they're hot, but there's no liquid between it, so we say, you know, obviously we shouldn't be doing that. Things could spill and the like. Dairy and meat pots should not be banging together while you're cooking dairy and meat in them. What?
Don't you have kids?
Would you let your kids near the stove?
Do your kids care if you don't let them near the stove?
Am I going to let you babysit my kids? Okay, so, but practically, we don't rely on that to say it's okay to do, but practically we say, there was no way for the taste to transfer. This comes up with glass top stoves all the time. Glass top stoves are the worst. I moved to Silver Spring and everyone seems to have these electric glass top stoves. Glass top stoves. They are the worst for
because
so many reasons.
Things can just go everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, they're a problem for kashering, for glass, which we'll get to when we talk about Pesach things. But also, something spills right there and it's sitting right on top of it. It's not like a grate where it goes down below, right. You know, it's sitting. So what if you have your pan that's on the grate or on the circle and it extends over the circle to other areas? So those other areas might be hot and you might also have a liquid beneath it. So all of a sudden I have a dairy pot on some, oily meat residue that I was just cooking on the stove. And now I have a heat and something in between.
What about steam from the pot?
Yeah, so that's we shouldn't cook, two meat and dairy right next to each other because of splatter, but generally we assume steam is going up, and as long as it's not an enclosed space, it's not such a problem.
Okay. I try to keep them far, so
that's ideal. That's very ideal for so many reasons, right?
Really, like chicken soup with a lid on it, like it's covered, and then if you're making something dairy,
yeah,
but not ideal.
Usually stoves have somewhat distance between it. It's okay to do that at the same time. Obviously, a person should probably be a little careful when doing it because just practically you mix one and accidentally flip over or you put the wrong lid on something. I mean, that's a whole portion of itself. But yes, practically you could have both going at the same time, preferably on the opposite parts of the stove. But this just highlights if you have two things that touch without a medium, even if you have a heat, you need both. So there's no actual transfer of taste. Listen, if there's real stuff there, then you've got a problem. And that's also why double wrapping things helps. Why double wrapping? Because double wrapping, if you wrap it once, so it traps in any steam or anything that's going to land on it. If you wrap it a second time, so there's basically never going to be any residue coming in between those two wraps, right? And usually, I mean, they have on airplane meals and the like, so you'll have on the outer one, but you won't have on the inner one or between the two. And so you can't really transfer taste or transfer anything unless you have some, you know, some liquid or the like. So that comes up a lot with microwaves, ovens. We'll get to microwaves and ovens when we talk about more about steam. But again, that's just trying to highlight the idea of two things touching. You need the heat and you need the medium, let's say the liquid. So what counts as hot, right? What's hot? Yad Soledis Bo. You've heard the term. Yad Soledis Bo means my hand cannot stay in it for more than, it immediately goes in, I pull it out. The other language they use, Yad Nichves Bo, like it just recoils quickly. Yad Soledis Bo, your hand recoils. The point is it's hot enough that you can't keep your hands there. Generally, the question I ask someone, if I ask, well, how hot was the water in your, let's say they're washing dishes and they use the wrong sponge or they use something else, and we'll get to practically what can happen, but I usually ask them, were you using gloves or not? If a person has to use gloves to wash dishes and it's on that hot, generally you have to be a little worried that it's probably Yad Soledis Bo, unless it's my grandmother, in which case she has her hands in scalding hot water. I don't know how she does it, but usually sink water is not going to be Yad Soledis Bo, but if you're wearing gloves and you couldn't do it otherwise, that's really hot. I think the numbers, the hottest tap water can be set to like 120 degrees. Hot tea is generally 165. So generally we assume that Yad Soledis Bo is around like 110 to 120. It's pretty hot. Although just to get an idea, like a cup of tea or a cup of coffee is like about 145 degrees. It's really a high temperature, a hot coffee. But that's just to get an idea of the heat. It definitely happens to, you can have sink water get that hot. So once you have something that hot, before we get to the hot, let's just talk about the cold, right? Because we talked about two things touching. Okay, so if in general, if you look in source one, so the Mishnah says, Sorer adam basar ugvina b'mitpachas achas. You can technically put meat and cheese in one cloth together. Ubavachla yinogim zebaze, as long as they're not touching. But v'chin daga mayhavi. So what do I care if the meat and the dairy touch? Sonin b'tzonin hu. They're both cold, right? And that's, I think someone said that before. If you have two cold objects they're touching, what do I care? There's no taste transfer. It's totally fine. So the Gemara says, Amar abaye nihi deklipa loibai hadacha miloibai. You're right. So you don't have to take off an outer layer because no taste transferred. But you know what you need to do? You need to wash it off. Because anytime you have two cold things touch, even if there was no heat to transfer the taste, you have residue. Now, almost all foods that we have some level of oily surface on it, have some level of, have some residue that they're going to leave on each other. So for example, our pizza and deli meat case, those two touch each other. I'd say there's residue being left on each other, right? So the deli meat, that's pretty easy to rinse off. So if a person could take that deli meat and it touched the pizza, rinse it off, you can eat that top piece because that rinses off really easily. I'm assuming the really processed one, not the fresh one from Mutti's. Like, mm-hmm. Do they still do that? The fresh turkey?
I love the
fresh turkey. Yeah. Oh, it's great. So that I'm worried. I don't know. Could you wash that off perfectly? I'm not sure. Certainly the processed one. But a pizza, how do you wash off a pizza? Right. That's a little bit more porous. So if it's a little more porous, so then you have to be worried that it actually went into it. In which case, you kind of have to scrape off the top. In which case, then there was really no point in your pizza because now there goes the cheese. So unless you're a crust type of person, I don't really see such a practical case to be eating that.
The spot where it touched?
If you know where it touched, yeah, you could take off that spot. Yeah, for sure.
And if it was another type of food that you could scrape off one layer and like still eat it, that would be okay?
Yeah. So for example, this comes up. Where does everyone buy their fish around here? Salmon. Where does everyone buy their salmon?
Costco frozen packs,
right? Costco also has a nice fresh ones too. But okay, Costco frozen packs, but I think those have a Heckscher, right? Yeah, those have a Heckscher. Good, you're a good Jew. But no, so can you go to a non-kosher fish store? I think Aldi's has nice salmon. That's what I've heard. My wife's gone there a few times. Costco definitely has fresh salmon. Whole Foods
has very nice.
Whole Foods has, it's too expensive, No. So can you go to Whole Foods and get fresh salmon? Technically, you could go to any non-kosher store, non-kosher fish store, and get a kosher fish. you'd have to know it has fins and scales. So you have to be able to feel if there are scales. But salmon is very special because salmon is very particular. There are no other types of fishes that have salmon color. Nowadays, I know you can color and put pigments, but I think generally we assume if you see the pink of a salmon and it's advertised as salmon, it's salmon.
Also, a lot of times in this, those fish stores, you can see more of the fish than just the fillet.
Right, exactly. So in a fish store, it's even better. But here's the problem, though. If I'm getting the salmon from a non-kosher store, so it probably was cut on a board that had non-kosher fish. It has residue on it. It was probably cut with a non-kosher knife that has some other fish on it. So I have to be worried. You can still get it, though, because, again, it's cold. There's no real heat transfer. But what you have to do is you have to bring it home and you have to run it underwater and, like, scrub it, right? And that's more to your point, which is if you have something that something touched and you have to be worried there's residue on it, as long as you're not dealing with the heat or something that's impossible to clean off. There's some things that it's so porous or it's so, like, cracks and fissures that once residue gets in there, game over. Like, I don't know, a pot roast, maybe, once it's cooked.
What if you bring your own knife to the store to get the fish?
That's what they used to do, right? Even better, if you bring your own knife to the store and you recognize the fish and you want them to cut it, so you can have them cut it. Again, if they're cutting it on the board, if it wasn't wiped, maybe you should still bring it home and wipe it down.
I think I've heard this, that when you're getting it from places like Costco or Aldi's, like a large store, that even if there was residue, they're cutting so many pieces of fish, like there's a bug substitution.
Yeah, they do say that. It's true.
You're saying the board itself would be bug substitution?
Well, any residue there is, they're saying by the time you're cutting the salmon, there's just no residue from other fish, right? It'd be hard to say that there's nullification if it's just sitting on the outside, right? Nullification has to be mixed in and it has to be unrecognizable. If there's stuff on the outside that were to leave a film, we wouldn't exactly say nullification in 60. But what they do say is that if usually they're just cutting salmon. Costco, I think, some share that I listened to a while ago, and this was a few years back, so I don't know if it's still true, but Costco, where they get their salmon, is just a salmon supplier. So they're not cutting other fish. You could maybe say that. I would just say it's not such a big deal when you buy fish from a store, fresh fish, from either of these stores, to take it home and before you cook it, to wash it down, just scrub it, you know?
So you don't need to scrape off the layer?
No, you just have to scrub it well. You have to clean it well in that sense. So that basically, again, is cold foods where you have to worry about residue, but there's no taste transfer, right? Again, if I have something that I can't do, like, I don't know, some tray fell on a piece of bread, you can't really rinse off bread. You also just scrubbing, it's not going to do anything. You would have to scrape off any area that it looks like it went into. Other foods like a tray for, I don't know, a lot of milk fell onto a cold roast. So let's say it's cold, I don't have to worry about transfer, but how am I getting out that milk? It's just so many fissures and cracks, I'd be too concerned. So in that sense, it's common sense, right? You have to just think about, is it practical to get rid of this residue?
Is it Mara-sign to walk up to the fish counter at Whole Foods when they're selling mollusks and lobster and everything else and work out a salmon? Is that like Mara-sign?
I think if you're there and you're getting a salmon, it's probably appropriate. I think that that's understood, that a person could get kosher there. I think it's appropriate. Aldi's, I don't know, but usually, most of the time, everything's cut and you're just going over to a counter and taking, right? That's usually. But even if you weren't, I think it would be appropriate. So that's basically cold with residue. You have to worry about that. So now let's go to hot stuff. So the first thing that is hot, and I just want to see this here, one second. The first thing, really, by the way, Four Elements, which is what I was referring to. This TV show obviously had Kashrus in mind when they talked about the Four Elements, because you have, thank you, Avi. Okay, because you have fire, which is the direct contact, direct heat, which for sure transfers taste. Then you have water, boiling stuff, which for sure transfers taste. Then you have contact between two different foods, just solid earth. And then you have aroma, steam, and wind, which is another thing which we'll have to contend with when we get to ovens and the like. So just realize all four of those elements have everything to do with kashrus.
That seems like Captain Planet knockoff.
What?
That seems like a Captain Planet knockoff.
Captain Planet.
Was that Avatar what you were saying?
Yes, yep. That was Avatar. I can't believe this is really... I can't believe this is going on recording, but at the same time, I also can't believe no one really knows what it is. Avi, you know what it is.
One of my favorite shows.
Okay, at least Avi. Okay, thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, right. Okay, so this right here, Captain, by the way.
Captain Planet. I don't know if David really knows that or not.
Yeah. Anyone? Oh, so I'm not the only one who doesn't. Okay, very good. All right. At least I had one person with me. You know. Okay. So, this right here is a kli rishon. If I have water or any food in this pot on a stove, and it's cooking, or if I take it off and it's still boiling, it's yad soletis, but I put my hand in, it recoils. This transfers taste, which means if I'm cooking something in here, this is actually a meat pot. So if I have a meat pot. And I accidentally cooked dairy in here, so I'm going to have to know, was this used in the past 24 hours? Because if it was, then meat taste is coming right out into my food, right? This is kli rishon, which means it's on the fire, whether, you know, because you're roasting or whether it's on the fire because you're boiling water, okay? So if I mix in, you know, if I use the wrong utensil, I have meat in here, and I mix with a dairy spoon, so what I just did was I gave the meat the ability to transfer into my spoon because I'm cooking on a stove with direct heat. It's hot, yad soletispo. Some say even if it's on the flame and it's not yad soletispo yet, you still have to be worried. But the point, most of the time, what we're dealing with is when you put it down, it's hot. I'm mixing my meat, wrong spoon. So now I have a concern because I have a few things going for me. I have meat in here that's hot, so meat taste is going into my dairy spoon. And I also have a dairy spoon, which if it was used in the past 24 hours, is putting dairy into my meat, right? You hear that? The two-way street. So the only way to save this, if this was Ben Yomo, right? If this had been used in the past 24 hours, would be if I had 60 against this spoon. So in this pot, I'm not really sure. You know, let's say the food only went up till here. But I have 60 times this lower half of the spoon in food in this pot? I'm not so sure. The way to check it, by the way, is water displacement. You fill up a large measuring cup for water all the way to the top. You put your spoon in it to wherever you thought that the food, you mixed it. You see how much water is displaced. Now you know how much volume is in that spoon. Then you check how much food is in here, and then you'll know if you have 60, right? You can just eyeball it sometimes also, and you know, okay? You know, if I have a huge spoon in here, I know I don't have 60. Anyway, so that is a classic case of where taste is for sure going to transfer, and I have to be concerned when I'm using the wrong things, right? Okay.
The spoon had to be used for hot, like really hot.
Right, because how did taste get into the spoon to start?
If it was like a real spoon, it wouldn't.
Why?
Because it was Ben Yomo. Like, you know.
Meaning, even if I had ever used
the milk taste can't transfer into
the right. So there are two saving graces here. This right here probably has been used with yad soletispo, but let's say assume this was just a cereal spoon. So how did this ever become dairy? Right? Even if it was within the past 24 hours, how did taste go into this? I need heat, right? So if this had only ever been used for cold, it's a great point. So then anyway, I'd be okay. Now, most of the spoons in my drawer are probably, at some point, have been used meat or dairy, right? You know, I guess it just depends.
So if the spoon was a milk spoon but not a Ben Yomo, then the pot would be okay, but the spoon would be traitor.
Right, the pot and the food would be okay, but the spoon would be kashering because I had meat that went into my spoon, but the spoon was either hasn't been used in 24 hours, or maybe this has never been used with hot, in which case... Yes, it's a dairy spoon, but there's no dairy taste to come out.
All utensils, if they were hot, does it have to be meat or dairy food? Like, is it a problem if, say, you use that dairy spoon, you put it into hot water to, like, mix a tea?
So if I have a hot cup, meaning let's say I have a dairy, this is a dairy cup, right?
No, say you have a par cup. I don't know, you have, like, a to-go cup.
And I mix with this?
Yeah.
So... Let's get to that in 1 second. We're about to. That's kli rishon, right? That's initial pot. A kli sheni is my secondary cup. So I boil water in a pot or in a kumkum, whatever it is, and I pour it into a cup. This is now a cliché-ney. Cliché-neys do not have the ability to cook as strongly as a Kli Rishon. The way Tosfos says it, and running out of time, so...
Purely based on temperature.
So I could have a cliché-ney, a secondary a vessel or utensil, that is still Yad Soled Espo. This could be hot, right? Tea can be super hot. I can't put my finger in it. This, we say, does not cook as strongly as a Kli Rishon. Why? In source 2, Tosfos says, because shekli rishon mitoch she'amad ala or dofnosav chamin umachzik chomo. Because when a Kli Rishon is on the fire, it's constantly the walls are keeping up the temperature and heating up what's in there. A Kli She'ni does the opposite. A Kli She'ni, this is cold. So even if I put hot water in there and it's super hot, the nature of the walls is to slowly cool it down. So as it's cooling down, it's not cooking, it's cooling down. It's doing the opposite, which is why at weddings, by the way, often they'll serve you soup in a hot bowl. Why? Because the nature of, you know, a Kli She'ni is to cool down things in. So if you put hot soup into a cold bowl, by nature, it's not continuing to cook it. It's actually cooling it down. So a tip for Sukkos, if it's really cold outside, warm up your dishes in the oven before you bring the food outside. Your food will be much hotter. So what we generally say about Kli She'ni, though, is we assume, unless there's, you know, big mistakes and other things, we assume it does cook. Certainly for an Ashkenazi, there's no Sephardim at the table, right? Okay, good. So for an Ashkenazi, we assume that it cooks. So when it comes to your to-go cup, right? So let's say I boiled some water and I put it in here and I made, I have coffee. I boiled coffee in a Kli Rishon, in the initial Kli. I put it in this and then I put milk in it, right? Then I mix it with a meat spoon. So that's basically your question?
No.
You want to know about par. Okay, so yeah. 1 second. So if I mix that in here, it's a Kli She'ni. So if it's still hot enough that my finger, you know, recoils, if it's still, you know, above 110, 120 degree range, so then I would assume that now meat taste, if this had been used in 24 hours, is going into my coffee. So I shouldn't drink the coffee. Okay, so that's in a Kli She'ni. So now you want to know, let's say I just had parv in here. This is a to-go cup, it's parv, and now I mix in with a meat spoon that has been used in 24 hours. So then the water in here I would have to treat as meat. I shouldn't put dairy into it. Right.
What if the Kli that was used in 24 hours wasn't used for real milchiks or real plishiks 24 hours? In the past it was, but in the 24-hour use it was used for parvs. It was used for something that's essentially parv.
Right.
Would it sort of awaken the plishik or milchiks?
It's a good question. I think we actually asked this. I think you asked this at the first year. I wasn't sure, but the answer is we assume it doesn't, if we're dealing with just meat to dairy or dairy to meat, it doesn't reawaken it. If you're dealing with real trafe things like a non-Jew spoon, yes, but that's not what we're dealing with. You know, just from meat to dairy, if I haven't used this with meat in 24 hours, even if I use it with parv in between, we assume it doesn't restart that count. It's always 24 hours since the last meat or dairy use. Yeah? Okay. So that's Kli She'ni. Now, the last thing to know is Irui, which is pouring. So I can have my Kli Rishon. This totally cooks, right? This transfers taste. I can have my Kli She'ni, which we say transfers taste. What if I pour, right? So I pour from my Kli Rishon, this thing, onto something else. Now, when does this mostly come up? So you can have things splattering and pouring and the like, but this is a dishwasher, right? You have water that is really hot spraying, you have, or in the sink, irui, it's water that's pouring. It's not in the initial cooker, in the boiler, it's now being poured. So how do we treat that? Does that have the ability to cook and transfer taste like a Kli Rishon, like the initial place it was, or is it weakened? So we generally say that while it can't transfer taste completely, it's not hot enough or strong enough because it doesn't have walls continuously heating it to transfer the taste throughout the entire vessel or food. What it can do, it can transfer it up to an outermost layer. So the taste is transferred with that heat to the outermost layer of any vessel. This could come up in different ways. I could have a strainer that I'm using for, and I somehow have, it's a dairy strainer, let's say, and I try to strain meat. Or something that's being used for meat. So if I pour onto it, so that just made that strainer dairy and meat because it transferred taste up into the outermost layer. For all intents and purposes, though, I don't care how much was transferred in for the vessel, I still have to kosher it. It comes up more with food. But when it comes to using a dishwasher or the like, so I have a few issues because when I use a dishwasher, so often when you put it in, there's food on the actual plates and stuff, right? They're not perfectly clean. So now I have irui. I have the water being sprayed every which way, hitting food, and transferring the food into the actual cookware. So I definitely can't put meat and dairy dishes in there at the same time because I have hot enough water that's spraying from food onto dishes back and forth, and it can transfer the taste. And even to do meat and dairy one after the other, I'll do meat one cycle, dairy the other cycle. So the issue is there you have the walls of the or the things that hold the dishes. So those have taste of the last thing that you washed in there. And now that's being sprayed, taken out, and put back into the dishes. The bigger issue is they say in the filters, there's often food that remains there that hasn't gone totally rancid yet. So that can also, that's usually a bigger issue with dishwashers. Because even if you want to say, you know, there's so many multiple transfers of taste, it weakens it. Well, not when you have actual food down there. That you have water that hits that and then hits that onto a plate or the like, it can make that into whatever that food was, meat, dairy. Okay, so that's why a dishwasher and washing dishes can cause problems. If I'm washing dishes with a dairy sponge on a meat container, so first I have to know if it's Yad Soled Espo. If the water is not Yad Soled Espo, meaning I can totally wash in my hands, no problem, keep them in there for 5 minutes, then there's not really a problem because I'm not worried that taste transferred because there was no heat. But if I'm dealing with where it was really hot, and while I was washing, I had a dairy sponge on a meat thing, and you know, it's coming straight down where I'm washing, so then I could be concerned that the irui, the pouring, that hot water pouring out, is transferring taste from one thing to another, okay? So that is the problem that can come up with irui. And I'm just looking over here.
In the sink?
Yeah, so the sink. The other factor in sinks and dishwashers, which people say, you know, this is why if you call and there's ever an issue with your sink or a dishwasher, this is another factor, soap, right? They say soap makes things taste bad, right? You wouldn't eat food that was mixed with soap. So the Shulchan Aruch actually in source, that is not source one, that's probably source four. So he actually says, Yeroy Ali, Shim Notno Nasno Afer B'mayim Chamim, if I put, you know, ashes or stuff into the water that I was washing dishes, Apel Pisha Shuman Davuk Behem Mutter, because even though there's physical residue or the like, so it's okay. Because Aidea Afer, who knows Saint Tom Lefgam, the Afer, the soap, the ashes make everything taste gross. We generally don't use this alone. We don't say, oh, there was soap there, everything's okay, right? Because a lot of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch disagree with this, but it's definitely a factor. So when you call a rabbi and they say, well, what was the deal? Was the water hot enough? Was there soap? So all these factors go into making something kosher or not, but it's just another factor to be aware of. All right, so I'm just trying to see here if there was any other facts. Okay, so let's go back to our initial questions, right? So question one, a sink in my apartment. Can I wash meat and dairy in the sink or to use a dishwasher for meat and dairy, right? So what's the issue here? Irui, meaning even though I'm not cooking in it, it's not, you know, the initial pot. What?
Sink's a kli.
Sink is not a kli rishon because the boiler, it's not the boiler, it's not where the water is heating. What is it? It's water pouring from the boiler, right? Water pouring out and coming into my sink. So if it's hot enough, it's Yad Soled Espo, I can't keep my hand there for more than a second. So then I have to worry it can transfer some taste. But very often that's not the case. But regardless, because of how hot it could be, and there is taste in the walls of a sink. So if a person has a single sink, you should have sink inserts or racks. You can put racks at the bottom and just make sure things stay on the racks. And also make sure that when the water, if it starts rising, to not let it rise past the dishes, because then you're dealing with maybe a cliche, right? Now you have a hot sink full of really hot water. Again, how hot is it? It depends on the situation.
What about just really quickly? You're washing a pot in the sink. The bottom of the pot never touches the food, so can you put the pot directly into the sink when you're washing it? And only the bottom of the pot is touching the sink?
Bottom of the pot? Well, no, because the bottom of the pot, while it never touched food, the entire pot is saturated with the taste, right? Even though there's no physical residue that touched the bottom. So this pot right here is a meat pot by nature of when I cook meat, the taste permeates through the entire thing, right?
That's if you're washing with boiling hot water. Not boiling, but really hot water.
Yeah. Generally, though, you shouldn't wash the same things in the... I mean, not generally. You shouldn't wash the same things in the sink at the same time.
No, but it's an empty sink. Or you don't want an empty sink?
Yeah. Oh, an empty sink.
Yeah, like an empty sink
that you washed dairy before, but now you're washing a meat.
No, like you're putting can pot in.
Can you set the pot in this?
Right. If it's not hot, hot water.
Or
if... And the sink's empty besides that pot.
You really shouldn't, because what's going to happen is what happens next time when you're not thinking and you put it right down and it is hot. Or there's hot water. Or there, by the way, sinks aren't always perfectly clean. That's another factor to realize. If I have one sink for meat and dairy, I don't scrub my sink every time I'm done using it. So it could be right at the bottom. There's some, you know, leftover cheese. Cheese does not clean as well or like go down as easily sometimes, especially if it was cold. So it gets stuck, right? And then I just put my hot meat pot straight onto cheese. So that's a bigger issue. So I would say as a general practice, it's just, you know, not so good because of all the issues that could come up. Right? Next thing you know, you're lifting your hot pot. Oh man, there's cheese on the bottom, right?
That's... It matters even though it's not touching the food.
Well, it could. I'm saying you could get physical food, cheese on my meat pot that's super hot.
It's on the outside. It's not getting to the food on the inside of the
pot. Right, but it turns this, part of this now took in taste from cheese.
And that gets through all the way.
It permeates at least to some degree. And even if it's not going to go straight through, in general, we don't use a pot that has meat and dairy taste in it, right?
So I was going to ask, I think it's similar, like not needing a tablecloth or something like that, like bringing a hot plate of meat on just a plain table that had hot food earlier. Like, it, I don't know, I'm just wondering if that's a thing or not.
So do you,
it is a thing, but does it need to be a
thing? Oh, so really? No, it also comes up with counters, right?
Yeah,
you have to have separate meat and dairy counters, right?
That,
do you have to have this?
No, but you have to, or...
No, I'm saying, do you?
Oh, we tried it, yeah.
Okay, so we tried to, by the way. They didn't used to, I'll tell you that much, right? So generally we assume if you put something on a counter, again, not good practice because there could be liquid, but you have to have a liquid and the heat to transfer. So if you put it down on, you know, a hot pot of meat on drips of milk, then you have a problem. But generally if your counters are clean, again, it's good practice to have meat and dairy.
Right.
But a table, so if you have a tablecloth for meat and dairy, if you're going to use the same tablecloth, it has to be cleaned down in between. Because otherwise, certainly if you have kids, you're going to have stuff on the table. So if I put down a really hot thing, listen, if you called up and you said, this happened, most case it would be okay because, well, this thing, was it really adds to lettuce bow? Or how hot was it? It might have been a cliché-ney. Although I guess if you heat it up in your oven, then put it straight on the table, that could, yeah. So I would say like this. Separate tablecloths are pretty important. It's good. If you're using one tablecloth for the same table or you don't have a tablecloth, it should really be cleaned in between meals, in between a meat and a dairy meal, because there's always some residue on the table, always some issue that could come up that way.
If you have a tablecloth or placemats, do you have to worry, and you're bringing out a hot dish, do you have to worry that it's not hot enough to go onto the table? Or, like, do you have to put something else underneath it? Or
no, because, again, assuming the table is clean, you don't have to worry about that because... We only worry about taste transfer if there's actually going to be residue or something in between it, right? But again, that's why I said, like, if you're going to use the same tablecloth, really clean it down. If you're worried that your table isn't perfectly clean, then yeah, you should put it on to something.
But if there's something in between, like, say, a hot dish, put it down on this tablecloth right here, it's only for meat, you don't have to worry about
it. Yeah, that's totally fine. Yeah, unless you see there's, you know, old cream cheese here from breakfast, right? Then that's definitely a problem. And
told your kid not to spill on the table. Is he going to listen like you told him to stay away from the stove?
No, that he won't listen, but anyway. Okay, so I think that basically covers most of the issues that come up. There are other things that when, you know, dairy flies onto your roast and the like, so Mirtz Hashem will talk about that next week using the same containers, even though they're cold, for meat and dairy, not at the same time, but for separate ones. You know, do you have to have different Tupperware? And then after that, ovens and microwaves. So if there's any other questions, you can feel free to ask, but we'll stop here. Yeah.